Through time, we realised that he was going to his room a lot and staying quiet, and he wouldn't be coming outside, even on a really lovely day. You could see him coming out with a hoodie on him, and I'd be sweating. I'm coming home from work, and the sweat would be dripping off him. He'd come out with the hoodie up, and I'd get the feeling he wasn't happy and that. So there was a lot of instances was going on beforehand, and...
But when did you realise, or when did he intimate to you, did he say to you, look, I am being bullied here?
Well, we actually knew he was being bullied before he said it to me, because he could have waited 7 or 8 months to tell me that he was being bullied, because the first instance, really the first thing that came to my mind is, like, he came home one Friday evening and... I didn't realise what happened, but seemingly we were watching a film on the television there on a Friday night, and he used to love watching films, like that was his hobby, his films and social media and that, and he disappeared out of the room here and he didn't watch the film. He watched about half an hour and then he went off, and didn't really realise that I went to bed, but my wife went in to check on him to see was he in bed and was he happy, and we realised he was missing, he was gone, and there was a big panic. He went out the sitting room window, and we didn't actually know what was going on. Like, we panicked at the time, and this was in November of 2020, and as the fella says, there was a big search party on, and we tried ringing him and the phone wouldn't answer, and sure, it was 12 o'clock at night and we were outside looking for him, and no one knew where he was. But after about half an hour, he answered the phone to his brother, and he said he was above in the village across Geese, which to us, I was panicking, but didn't understand why. So Finn jumped into the car and he said he'd go up and pick him up. But as Finn was driving off, I seen a shadow coming down on the top of the hill there from the fields, and I says, you know, I was half afraid to go out with a flashlight looking for him, because, you know, when a lad doesn't want to be found, the last thing you want to do is make him hide on you. So I seen him coming down with the shadow, so I waited and I watched, and I came down to the house and I asked him what was wrong, and he said he just wanted to clear his head and sorry.
Take your time.
He said he just needed to clear his head and didn't understand why, but got him in, and we sent him to a counsellor during the week. But seemingly the counsellor told us then that somebody had, just can't remember rightly if it was on a private phone call or a private text, but he told the counsellor, now it's that, you know, it's a good few months ago now, but they had told him to go and hang himself, that he was a useless good for nothing, not in his nice words, and he said he had to clear his head, he had to deal with that, and so I knew something was wrong, and I got on to Father Jason, because there was recently a very sad couple of suicides in our area, yes. Matthew Gaffney and Jason Colby, and we would have been involved very closely with both of them, our neighbours, and Eden would have known Matthew Gaffney. In fact, Matthew Gaffney worked for me, so I rang Father Jason because I knew he had a great way of talking to young lads, and also I got the feeling that this was bullying, and I asked Eden on the Saturday, which was the next day, Eden, is this, are you being bullied? You know, because come out straight and ask him, and he says, yeah, Dad, I am. So that's good, now I know where you are. I says, look, we'll do something about it, and I got Father Jason out. Didn't tell Eden, I just rang Father Jason and I explained to him that I wanted him just to talk to Eden and see could he get out of him what's wrong, and see could he try to understand where Eden was, and because really he wasn't telling us anything, only we know something seriously is wrong. So Father Jason came out and we all left the house, and we just left him alone here in the house for 2 to 3 hours, and he chatted away and he told him his life story,
There's an important line I borrowed from what Father Jason said at Eden's funeral. Father Jason referred to the fact that in those conversations with Eden, Eden talked to him about the pain he was experiencing. He did so without emotion for a young lad, which is highly unusual. But Father Jason has put it down to the fact, Chloe, that Eden had almost, to use Father Jason's words, he'd almost befriended his pain. In other words, he had sort of come about to a way of thinking which meant that this was it. I have to put up with it. This is the way it's going to be.
Yeah, I think he accepted it because it was happening so regularly every day of his life that he was getting it and he couldn't escape it. It was on his phone as well. And no matter what, if he blocked them, they'd always make new accounts or anything like that. And he couldn't put anything up on any social media without something being said to him. And I'm glad that he got to speak to Father Jason, because that was the first time I think he had truly admitted to anybody or let anybody in on his pain. Even since that November, we still don't know exactly what was said. We have implications of the different times he would have opened up a wee bit. But, you know, it was constant.
Yeah, the signs are there that there was cyberbullying, there was all sorts of abuse being hurled at him, not only online, but also I know, Raymond, that it came on a personal way as well, didn't it?
It did, yeah. Basically every form of bullying that could be done to Eden was done, and he got it. Mentally, he got it physically, he got it by social media, phones, and even when he left school, they were still after him. They didn't leave him alone, and that's what ended poor Eden's life. Now, Eden was I'll give you, for instance, Eden was a great character. I always felt that Eden should have been on the stage, because I'd done a bit of drama, amateur dramatics myself. And I eyed out Eden as a son coming along that was a character. And he had wit. He had serious wit and serious character. Like, in national school, I'll just give you, for instance, I think he's the only child that played AC/DC on the altar of Cavan Parish Church. And it was hilarious. And we have videos of him doing it. And he just didn't do it. He'd done it, you would swear it was AC/DC, Angus, you'd swear it was Angus. He was just so good at it. But everything he'd done like that, he could learn music, sing music. He was a character, he did. And it was heartbreaking to hear the stories. Like, I knew nothing really. Even Father Jason didn't tell us, because he just said to us, look, it's bad. It's really, really bad. He says, it's so bad that the guard should be involved. But he says, we'll start him in a new school next week. And I says, that's fine. But Eden would not. That was in November. And Eden still never spoke to Maggie or myself. Little bits he'd say to Finn and little bits to Chloe, but he'd never give away what the bullying was about. And so this night, I know he still was having his ups and his downs. He could be high and then he could be very low. And I said, right, I bought an old Deutz Fahr. Finn was very proud of me. It was one of the oldest hay bobs I think you could get in the country. But I bought it to do it up to Ted out hay and silage. And I says, now, Eden, it's a long drive. And I says, I mightn't be able to load this myself. I says, you'll come for the spin. Now, and I had a plan in action to try and talk to him. And it was about an hour and a half drive to Kinnegad. And I think we were about Granard when I slowly edged into the conversation, and he talked to me for the whole way over, and we loaded the hay bob or the tether and talked to me the whole way back, and the stuff he told me just completely shocked me. And
what did he tell you, Raymond? What did he say to you?
Well, it started. There was a number of instances where I think the thing that hurt him the most was that they would just kick him all the time. He says, never one. He says, Dad, always 3-4. He says, I can handle 1-1, but he says, always 3-4. Kicking him all the time, kicking every week, kicking him, fall to the ground, they'd kick him on the ground. And one of the things he couldn't understand while they were kicking him, they'd say, I don't know if I can say it, but it's quite upsetting. Go home to your own country, you black Protestant bastard. And that hurt him, because Eden's mother is Roman Catholic and I'm Protestant, and we brought our children up as Christians to respect both sides of religion and to respect neighbours and respect family. And he was so hurt with that. He even said when he was on the ground, I'm not a Protestant. And they said, you are a Protestant. Go home to your own country. And I tried to explain to him that these people are just very ignorant, that this is not the normal, and he found it very hard. He says it happened on a regular occurrence. And then when I had him talking, he says, and Daddy says to put my head down the toilet. And I says, what do you mean? He says, Dad, on a regular occurrence, the group of lads, they get me and stick my head down the toilet. And he says, never a clean one. He says, they pick the dirtiest, shittiest toilet to do it. And he says, they'd stand and laugh. And I tried that night from Kinnegad. There was other stuff of throwing food all the time. They'd be sitting at the table and there was lads throwing full apples across the room and one apple hit a lad beside him, and Aidan stood up and said, "Ah, oh, come on, lads, that's ridiculous." He says, "That was a full apple, you could kill someone with that." And he stood up to him and said, "Who threw that?" And the big lads all said, "Well, I threw it. All the lads threw it. No one would admit to throwing it." And while he was standing there, someone lifted a big salad sandwich and flailed it at his back and covered his whole jumper with salad and salad cream, and lads laughing at him then, "Oh, Aidan, your jumper's all salad cream." And he turned round to the lads behind him and he says, "Who threw that?" And they all said the same again, I threw it. So Aidan went down to face them and he just said, when they were holding him down at the table, beating him and hammering him, they were holding his head on the table and boxing him. That was hard to take, to think that your wee man that was so special and you love so much. Mm-hmm. And he thought it was wrong. He thought, like, that lad that was sitting beside him got hit in the side of the head and could have been killed with that full apple. That's who he was. He just, like, that's...
Just only... as Chloe was saying, he was looking out for everyone.
Yeah.
And even when he was going to suffer as a result, he still stood up, not only for himself, but for everyone else.
Also want to raise, like, awareness of psychological and mental and emotional bullying as well, that feeling left out, you know, trying going to parties, other people going to parties and you getting Snapchat, Aidan getting Snapchats of it and after not being invited and stuff like that was happening on a regular occurrence. And just to know that it's not just physical bullying, it's mental, cyber bullying, emotional bullying. He was hurt a lot of the time, social media.
And then what he was seeing on social media was that they were going out, but he wasn't.
Yeah.
He had been left below or left alone or left behind.
Yeah, and Aidan wouldn't go out in the local area, afraid to meet these people that were physically bullying him. And he was so afraid that he wouldn't, you know, it's our local town, go in to get some food or a takeaway. He wouldn't go in case he'd meet these people. If I brought him on a drive somewhere, he wouldn't go in to buy milk or sweets or anything like that. It would be me that would have to go in. He wouldn't. And if he, I remember driving past our local town and there was people there that he knew and he actually ducked in the car because they walked in front of me and I blared the horn and he ducked in the car so that they wouldn't see him. Stuff like that, that he had to be constantly aware of stuff that I would never think about or any of us would ever think about, he was thinking about all the time because of these people.
And you've all made a very conscious decision. Despite what you must be going through, you've all made a conscious decision that, and we talked about this off air, Chloe, and, you know, I don't want to use one of the oldest cliches of all, but you want some good to come out of this. You want to spread a message. You want to send out a message. I know, Raymond, you talked about this at Aidan's funeral. You want those who are being bullied to reach out, to ask for help, to seek help. But at the same time, you've talked about this idea you have as regards a confidential telephone number.
Yeah, well, look at... Aidan was big into his phones and he was big into his social media and that, but at the end of the whole lot, he didn't talk to anyone until we got him to a counsellor. And I just thought, like, there's really no place for a young person or anyone in the workplace to go for bullying, because there is no law on bullying. There is no prosecution. The Gardaí can't go and prosecute anyone for bullying because there is no law. For a start, which is I find is very, very upsetting to think that, like, it's bad enough being bullied, but at the end of the day, to know that there's no law to stop these people from doing it. Okay, the schools can suspend and they can, you know, but an actual prosecution for someone that's making your life a misery is not there at the minute. And the only way you'll get it there is if the Gardaí and the people understand that, like, this bullying is going on and it's just rampant on social media. Like, there's a thing called Snapchat, and it's a disaster. There's no comeback on that. Like, you can say anything you want on Snapchat and within 10 seconds it's gone on your phone.
Yeah.
And there's no comeback on it. If you want to get it, you have to go to the High Court now. I don't know if you can even do it that way. They do want to give it. It doesn't seem like the government wants to stop it, because it's a big moneymaker in the phone business, I would say, because every young person in Ireland is using it. Now, Chloe wants to say
yeah,
something.
Yeah, I want to... It makes me, not angry, but that there's a law against not paying your TV licence. You can go to jail for not paying your TV licence. And there's nothing that can be done for bullying, for making other people's lives an absolute misery. Also, I want conversations to be had in houses, not asking, are you being bullied? To, instead of hiding behind it and pushing it under a carpet, ask your children, ask your family, are you bullying somebody else? Ask them, because, you know, maybe they might say, actually, yeah, and I'm doing wrong. Or it's having a conversation.
Yeah.
It's not hiding away saying, oh, my child would never do that. Mm. My brother would never do that. Ask them. Make it wide open into the house. Because there is people out there that are doing this and they know it, and their family may have no idea about it.
And you know, Chloe, they are, because I only spoke about this recently on the programme, in many cases, they themselves are victims.
Mm.
And the best line of defence is attack.
Yeah.
So they become a bully or part of a group that is bullying to protect themselves, whereas they know in their heart and soul they're doing wrong. And we need to reach out to them as well. I'm not trying to defend the bully in any way.
I understand, and it's hard in this situation to think of that, but I do understand. And as a teacher, a trainee teacher myself, I know that it happens in schools, it happens in homes, it happens in workplaces. Mm-hmm. And just have that conversation and keep talking about it. I think the phone line would be good, but I also think that if we don't talk about this problem, about Eden, it's never going to be dealt with. I'm going to shout it from the rooftops that something has to be done in 2021. That, you know, laws can be brought in about this, that and other, not paying a TV licence. I keep bringing that up, but Eden was such a big lover of TV that, you know, something has to be done. And like the amount of letters that I've received, anonymous ones with names from local people, from people in Cork, everywhere. Even online, I'm getting messages about people that have been bullied themselves or have known family members that have committed suicide and from bullying. And it's heartbreaking to hear. But if all them people gather around and stand up and say something has to change, because it does, I'm not sitting down here and letting everyone away with this. And it has to be done. Sorry,
but No. Your voice has to be heard. Maggie, first of all, thank you for welcoming me into your home. I have a picture of Eden here in front of me on what looks like a scrambler motorbike of sorts or what have you. We mentioned he loved his cars, he loved his music, he loved the bikes or what have you. You're his mum. What message, if any, would you like to send out this morning on this radio show? I know it's difficult, so take your time.
I just what Chloe said, that Eden can't die in vain, that every parent has to talk to their child, because I thought I could protect Eden. I'm his mother. I thought I could keep him alive forever. He was my baby. And I can't imagine another mother sitting here what I am in pain today, because it's not right. Something has to be done about it. It's going on everywhere in every place. So We just have to talk. That's it. Just talk to your children, please.